I told you the content of the wanted poster, okay? And explain what it is, but now I need to do two things. First of all, to really formalize the fact that this is enough. And second, to prove that this can be achieved, okay? So by the way, the fact that this can be achieved is a fact in the geometry of Rn. We are completely, and in fact, combinatorial geometry of Rn, we were completely outside of topology at this stage, okay? This is happening on affine chains, okay? Anyway, why is this enough? Okay, so our context, or suppose we've achieved this, why are we done? So the context is the follow, is the following. We have two chain complexes. The chain complexes of small chains in X. If you want to insert here comma A, I don't care, it makes no difference at all, whatsoever. Okay? And we have the complex of all simplices in X, and there is the inclusion maps, there are the differential, the boundary maps on both sides, and there are the inclusions going that way. Okay? We want to construct inverse maps, or more precisely, we want to show that the map that this inclusion induces on homology is one-to-one and onto, is an isomorphism. We actually will not construct inverse maps. We will only, well, the inverse will be just the inverse, we will show that it's invertible not by constructing an inverse map. Okay. Now, what else do we have? Assuming these S and T, so these S and T's that we will achieve here, automatically define S and T also at this level. So, I mean, strictly speaking, it's not the same S and T, but it's clear how to do it. So, you know, if you have a simplex in X, you just act on the domain and then map into X. I think I said it even. So the S over there defines a different S, maybe S bar, going from Cn of X to Cn of X, and then another one from Cn plus 1 to Cn plus 1, and then another one from here to here, and maybe I'll drop the bars and use the same name, but strictly speaking, it's not the same map. Similarly, we have maps T going the other way here. Okay? And you can check that that these properties, or it's sort of clear that these properties on the affine level implies that the same properties happen here. Okay? Now, this is not going to help us to construct an inverse map. Namely, how would I construct an inverse map? S cuts the size of simplices by just a little bit. I mean, bounded away from 1, namely, I mean, if n is equal to 7, then each new simplex will be 7/8 of the old size. But the simplices in X could be zillions of times too big. So just applying S doesn't, so applying S and then mapping back somehow is just not going to work. Okay? So now, even if I found a theory, and it's actually not hard to show that I should have said even before that, the fact that S commutes with the differential means that S defines an automorphism of the homology here. So S does nothing to the, defines a map from the homology here to the homology here, right? And the fact that S minus the identity is equal to T times the boundary plus the boundary times T, that's the same, the usual homotopy condition. So it implies that S defines an automorphism of this the identity map. S induces the identity map on the homology here. Okay? But it never breaks simplices enough so that you can get here. At least no power of neither S nor any finite power of S will work for everything. Okay? But I don't need everything. Okay? If you give me an element here, meaning in the homology here. Is this what I want to say? No. If you give me an element in the homology here, so let me try to show you that this map is onto. Okay? If you give me an element in the homology here, this element is a linear combination of finitely many simplices. Only finitely many. Each one of them has a Lebesgue number, and the minimum of these Lebesgue numbers is some fixed is some number bounded away from zero. So if I break each one of them using S finitely many times, I fall in the image of small simplices. So I don't need a global inverse. It's enough that, again, take a cycle here. It's a finite combination. Replace it by S of itself. That doesn't change the homology class. Replace it again by S of itself, of S of the result. That doesn't change the homology class. Do it 17,000 times. You've never changed the homology class. And now you clearly are in the image of that. Okay, and one-to-one, and injectivity is proven in a similar way. So basically, suppose you have something here that goes to zero here. If it goes to zero here, it's because it's in the image of some big things. But then you can subdivide everything. You can subdivide both at the same time. Until it's in the image of small things, and then you can bring them back here, and you're in the image. Okay, so that's the sketch. And I could write it in formulas, but I don't see the point. I think the sketch is enough. And then what remains is to actually make the construction. And I think I will again only sketch it. So the sketch is partially shown in the wanted poster itself, and partially in the other handout that I gave you. So the trick is to use so-called barycentric subdivision. And what's barycentric subdivision? So if you're barycentrically subdividing a line, you take the center of gravity of the two endpoints. That gives you a point in the middle, and that's the barycentric subdivision. Okay? And that, by the way, commutes with affine linear maps. Well, it has no hardly any properties because too little was used so far. Now, how do you barycentrically subdivide a triangle? You find the barycenter. The barycenter is the center of mass. So basically, sum vi over 3. Okay? It's somewhere inside. And you find the barycenter of each of the edges. And then you connect all the lines you possibly can. Okay? And then, how do you subdivide? Here is a picture, and here's what you get if you iterate it. So you can iterate it, you can barycentrically subdivide each of the resulting triangles, and then here's the second iteration, and you can sort of see that the triangles shrink. Okay? How do you barycentrically subdivide a tetrahedron, so a three-dimensional thing? You barycentrically subdivide each face. I forgot something. No, I didn't. No, yes, I did, this one. You barycentrically subdivide each face. So you do it to each of the faces. And then you have the whole barycenter of the middle somewhere. And you just construct all the simplices that are constructed by sort of taking a cone from the center to all of these faces. Okay? And that concludes the construction of S. Let's formalize it. Okay? So somehow the key to the construction is the cone construction. You have a simplex already, which you got by barycentrically subdividing inductively the previous face, a face, okay? And then you construct a cone to it from the center of the big. So basically, if I understood the word cone, everything would be clear. But hey, I understand the word cone. It's not very hard. So definition. So given a vector V in a vector space V, our vector space, I called it vertex by mistake because it will be a vertex immediately. I can construct a map. I can construct a map from Cn to Cn plus one. Which I will call C sub V. Sorry for the overuse of the letter C. This C stands for chains, and this C here stands for cone. It's the cone whose tip is V. It's a map which maps a simplex sigma to what I will call the cone on sigma with tip V. Now, what is it? Well, so if sigma is equal to U0 up to UN, then then what would be the cone over sigma? Well, you just add another vertex. You just make a new vertex, which would be the tip. So it's just V, comma, U0 up to UN. That's all. Okay? Now, since we're going to, so since cone is going to star in our construction, we better understand how it interacts with boundary. So, in other words, what is the boundary of the cone with tip V on top of a triangle sigma? So in pictures, the picture is completely clear, right? If I have a simplex sigma, I have, so this is sigma, I have a vertex V, I turn it into a cone, the boundary will be sigma itself. This is sort of the bottom, or the top, I suppose. And then a triangle for each one of the edges of the original sigma. Okay? So, said differently, you should be getting sigma union the cone over the vertex V on the boundary of sigma. Okay, that's the geometric intuition. The only thing left is to work out the signs, and the sign is a minus. Right, all of the, okay, so I've, here I told you how to cone an individual one, but I really meant extend it linearly to linear combinations. So all of these are really linear maps, And now it's an identity between elements in chain space, so formal linear combinations. Proof, oh, the proof is ridiculous. Okay, what's the boundary of the cone? The cone has a V added. The boundary of the cone is to remove any one of those. If you remove, right, the boundary just removes one. If you remove the first one, you get the sigma you started from, and it's with sign plus. The first one is with sign plus. And then you alternate removing ziv, and you just get the cone over the boundary pieces, but with a shift of one, so a sign of minus, okay? It's really not interesting. Okay, now I can define the bar, so now that I have the cone construction, I can define the barycentric subdivision. Oh, so first of all, I have to tell you what B sigma is. So B sigma is a vector. If sigma is a simplex, B sigma is a vector, and it's the barycenter of sigma. Meaning it is defined by, so B of a list of vertices U1 up to UN is this just arithmetic average of these vertices. So 1 over n plus 1 sum ui. Okay? So now, what is the subdivision of a simplex sigma? So basically, look at this picture. I subdivided the boundary of sigma, and then built a cone from the barycenter on top of that. So that will become my definition. Take the boundary of sigma, subdivide it, and construct the cone over that with tip the barycenter. So this is an inductive construction. If sigma is of dimension n, then boundary of sigma is dimension n minus 1, so this makes sense. And all I have to do is to base the induction. So this is if n is greater than 0, if n is equal to 0, so if it's a single point, the way you subdivide a single point is by doing nothing. So it's just sigma itself. Okay? Good. Now, did I take pictures of that? I don't think so. So, no. So we're actually in position to prove the first property. Actually, we're in position to prove both of these properties. Okay? Basically, the only one we're not able to prove yet is the one involving T, but we haven't defined T. But we can prove these two. So how do you prove each of these? Basically, silly. So this one is silly induction. And I'm not going to, I could do it, it's even in my notes, and it's just one line. Should I do it one line induction? Yes? Okay, fine. So I want to show you that but the geometry is completely clear, right? So what could go wrong? It's just a matter of tracing definitions. So the boundary of S of sigma, sorry, I'm going back to old notation, because my old notes are like that. So by definition, this is the boundary of the cone that you build on S on the subdivision of the boundary of sigma. Right? This is, okay, the boundary of a cone is sigma minus the cone on the boundary. So it's this, so it's S of boundary sigma minus the cone on the boundary. So the cone on the of using the barycenter of sigma on the boundary of the thing written here, which is S boundary sigma. Okay? But now this is in dimension one less. So let's see, if sigma was of dimension n, then the boundary of sigma is of dimension n minus 1. So now I'm applying del S to something of dimension n minus 1. And by induction, it commutes. So this becomes S del del sigma, but the boundary of a boundary is 0. Well, we haven't formally proven it for affine simplices, but it's the same definition, so it's the same proof. So this goes to 0, and you're left with the first term, which is S boundary of sigma, which is what you wanted to show. Okay? And then this one is actually hard. I don't know, should I leave it to you as a sort of Putnam style? Not Putnam really, but like the first question in a Putnam. not the last one, okay? I mean, it's actually surprisingly difficult to show that in n dimensions, what is it that we need to show? We need to show that, telling you what we need to show is half the work. But showing that all of the triangles in the barycentric subdivision have size at most two-thirds, have diameter at most two-thirds of the original diameter. Sorry, this is in dimension, two-thirds, sorry. And that in n dimensions it becomes n over n plus 1. That's actually a surprisingly hard riddle about n points in Rn. Should I leave it to you or should I show it? What?
Leave it.
Leave it. Okay. Okay. What? Sorry?
I would like to see it.
Okay. So, you know what, let me just tell you what you... Okay, you know what, let me do it really sketchy. So, okay. So, what is it that we need to show, actually? So, the diameter is the maximum distance between two points. So the diameter of a simplex is the maximum distance between two vertices of that simplex. Now, if you subdivide, the vertices that you get are all barycenters of subsets of the full set of vertices. So this is the barycenter of everything. This is the barycenter of these two. This vertex is the barycenter of the singleton, which is itself. Okay? And it goes on like that, so in the dimension one up, all of the vertices that you get are barycenters of subsets of the original set. So the claim you want to show is that if B is a subset of A, and both are finite, non-empty sequences of vectors of vects in some Euclidean space, I don't care which. Okay. I should have said something else. If two vertices belong to the same subdivided piece, then no, in fact, I don't even need to say that. Sorry, I don't even need that. So the claim is that in this case, then the barycenter of B, the distance between the barycenter of B and the barycenter of A, is at most the cardinality of A minus 1 over the cardinality of A times the maximum of the distances that occur in A. So the maximum over all V and W inside A of V minus W. So basically, okay, the shift, sorry, there is a shift here of 1 because if sigma is of dimension n, it's defined by n plus 1 vertices. So the cardinality of A in this set, so A stands for the vertices of the original sigma. So the cardinality of A will be n plus 1, so this is really n over n plus 1. I mean, I just wrote it in a way that hides the origin. And so this is the diameter of the original simplex divided, multiplied by the appropriate factor, and this is the length of any edge that could possibly appear in the subdivision. So that's the statement that you want to prove. Okay? So, this is claim. And now proof. So the proof has two steps. So, first of all, replace B by B times the barycenter of B. Notice that I said here sequences of vectors, not sets of vectors, allowing repetitions. Okay? So, in other words, here is my set of vectors. Here is my set of vectors. So this is the overall set of vectors. This is the subset B. But the vectors could have repetitions. And that's actually the correct thing to do. So replace these two vectors by, so these two, just replace them by twice the midpoint. So take this, the midpoint, twice. Okay. So this doesn't change the left-hand side because the barycenter of B is still the same. You've replaced these two by their center of mass. The center of mass has the same center of mass as the original two. So this hasn't changed, and it also doesn't change the barycenter of the overall, because, again, replacing two vectors by their center of mass doesn't change the overall center of mass, even if you add other things. Okay, so the left-hand side is unchanged. Left-hand side is same. And what happens to the right-hand side? So the distance function is convex. Convex, concave, whatever it is. Basically, if the distance to the new point is going to be less than either this one or that one, or if you had n of them, then it's going to be less than at least one of them. So the new distances would be less, or the maximal of the new distances is going to be less than the maximum of the old distances. So you have shrunk the right-hand side. Right-hand side shrinks. So you're going in the good direction. If you're still showing the inequality after doing this, then it was certainly true before doing this. Okay? Now, replace, second step is replace the complement, so replace A minus B by the cardinality of A minus B times the barycenter of A minus B. So basically, so now that all the B's are the same, collapse A to a single thing. And, okay, I'll stop. I don't remember what happens now. I think it's the same thing. The left-hand side doesn't change, the right-hand side shrinks. So now you're left with just two points, and for two points there is nothing to prove. Okay. Okay, we're almost done. Okay, let me take one more picture. Oh no, I keep pressing the wrong things. Okay. No, I think the order was this. And then. Okay. So now I need to tell you how to construct T. And the construction of T is, again, I'll do it in low dimensions, and this will inspire a higher dimensional definition. So, okay, I need to tell you, okay, I need to find I've erased the property that T has to satisfy. So the property was S minus I is equal to boundary of T minus T of the boundary. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I need to find, here is S of an interval. So this is S sigma in the one-dimensional case. Here is sigma. Okay? So I'm telling you a lie, because really these two lie on top of each other. Okay, but if I really drew them on top of each other, you wouldn't be able to tell what I'm drawing. So I'm kind of drawing a vertical unraveling of the picture. To get the true picture, you need to take what I draw and collapse it vertically. But again, then you don't see anything. Okay? I need to find something whose boundary is this minus that. So this minus that is the boundary of T, of the T that I'm about to find. But I'm allowing myself a mistake that happens only on the boundary of sigma. Okay? So take a point in the middle. I mean, the point in the middle is simply the same as that point. But visually, I put it on a different level so that you could see all the triangles that I'm about to write. And then connect it on the one side to these two, and on the other side to these three, and add these lines. Okay? And now I found, okay, and now the boundary of the, okay, so this is T. Okay? And the boundary of T now is the top minus the bottom, plus an edge contribution that comes from this side, from this part. So I started the induction one step too high. And then for the next level of T, it's best to look at the wanted pest poster where it's just shown one dimension up. So basically, you I guess you do the same on each to the whole prism. So you have a prism whose bottom is one piece, but whose top is it's really hard to draw, especially if you're not talented. So whose top is subdivided. And then you need to present it as the boundary of something, and that something will simply be the cone on the bottom plus or minus the cone on the top, which is just a subdivision of the bottom, plus or minus the cones, the cones on the subdivisions of the edges, on the same construction down to the edges. So let me formalize it. So T sigma is defined to be, if n is greater than zero, it's cone using the barycenter of sigma, so the cone using this point, which is really the same as this one and the same as that one, but graphically it's better to separate them. So it's the cone on the using the barycenter of sigma, done on S of sigma, so you cone to the top, minus sigma itself, so you cone to the bottom, minus you cone towards the same construction done on all of the edges. So T of the boundary of sigma. This is for n greater than 0. For n equals to 0, I suppose I should have started my construction at n equals 0, but for n equals 0, S did nothing, so T doesn't need to do anything. So sigma minus S of sigma is 0. I don't need to do anything, so I'll just set T sigma to be 0. And now I need to prove that, okay, so this is a fully legitimate, it doesn't matter if you bought my geometry or not. Okay, you don't have to buy my geometry. The definition is well posed, okay? So now you just have to check that it satisfies the requirement. So the requirement, it's this requirement, right? So you start from the hardest term, which is this one. So you compute the boundary of T of sigma. And it's basically the same. I don't think I want this one. I really shouldn't do. Okay? So basically you take it's the boundary of the cone over something, then the boundary of a cone, we had a formula for that. You just keep dragging it through and you get what you wanted. That's all. So, we're done. I have nothing else to say. So, I hope you didn't suffer too much.
Thank you.
Any questions? Any? Maybe clearly this is the tip of an iceberg, right? There is, that's the beginning of algebraic topology, which is a huge subject.